Bee Nation. I'm Tyler Kelly coming to you, TBN, Kansas, recovering from the beating my beloved Chiefs suffered in the Super Bowl, battling some polar vortex nonsense, freezing my ass off. So I'm looking to the warm comfort food that is WCW, and specifically the greatest WCW matches ever. And I'm looking to the sunny disposition of my charismatic and talented co-host, Jambalaya Jacob Williams. What's up, Jake?
Not much, Tyler. Not as much. The polar vortex doesn't hit as far down south. It gets a little cold here, but I'm sure nothing compared to what you're facing. I'm very sorry for you and your beloved Chiefs and what happened in the Super Bowl. Very disappointing. But trust me, I know, because they knocked my team out of the playoffs. So I kind of feel your pain. Maybe not to the same extremes, but I've had a fair share of over the past 10 years of playoff heartbreak. So I kind of know where you're coming from, at least to some extent. So it's a bummer. But like you said, I'm glad that we have our evergreen comfort food that is the mixing my metaphors there. That is our GWCW list in these wonderful classic WCW matches, which are at minimum 20 years old at this point.
That's right. And actually, that brings up a good point that I just wanted to make for our listeners, that we, by choice, we've made these short and we'll only cover 10 matches from our list. So keep in mind that you only get a small snapshot of our list at any given time. So I noticed that episode one, we were pretty heavy on 90s matches. But I assure you that both you and our diehards, you know, we're big proponents of that good 80s GP as well. So in episode one, we covered matches 100 through 91. So tonight we'll cover matches 90 through 81. And I went last. So Jake, why don't you start us off with your number 90 match?
Yeah, so my number 90 is from obviously a very well-known show, which is WrestleWar 1992. It is not maybe the most notable match, I'm sure. That one we'll get to much, much, much later, I think, in both of our cases. But my number 90 was Brian Pillman versus Z-Man for the light heavyweight title. I had it number 90. I don't think you had this one ranked, Tyler. But the first thing about this one is I know Z-Man is maybe not always the most well-regarded, like in his WCW run. And I agree. Like, he doesn't have a ton of great stuff here. And I don't think he's particularly the greatest part of this match. But what I do love and what is great is I know Pillman's kind of known a lot for his, you know, his loose cannon stuff later in his career and the Hollywood Blondes as a heel. But I definitely love me some face Brian Pillman in WCW. He is a super awesome, like, fiery baby face, especially in these like light heavyweight matches. So this match, I enjoy it because well, one thing you do kind of have the little story baked into this of like the former tag team partners in this, which I like. And immediately out of the gate, you have Jesse on commentary. So that's pretty fun. He's like selling this story of basically these guys are both sort of faces. Obviously, I didn't say faces, but you get the idea. And his whole thing is like one of them is going to have to cheat. And so that's a big thing that Jesse's pushing in the match. It doesn't really come into play that much, but I at least like that he's trying to sell that that's what's going to happen here, to at least give some kind of tension or drama to this, like a face-face sort of match. They do a lot in the early going of doing the whole like these two guys are evenly matched sort of thing, and they just kind of go into a really a well done, well built sort of cruiserweight match. They don't do a ton of high spots, like it's not a spot fest type of match or anything like that, but the stuff they do is really well done. I always like when I feel like matches build good momentum as they throughout the match, and I think this one builds pretty well. You get some nice reversal sequences, really good selling, which is one of the best parts of face Brian Pillman. He's awesome at selling. And he does a great job in this one as usual. They kind of each sort of work a body part a little bit, like Pillman, Z-Man goes after Pillman's back, and then Pillman's working over the knee, and they both do a good job of selling that. And kind of, like I said, one of the big through lines in the match is that both these guys are sort of evenly matched. And so the whole story of the match is kind of who's going to be able to overcome that and find some way to win this. And I like that it comes into play in the finish because the finish is basically Pillman avoids the drop kick and kind of has him, and then he kind of pulls him into a roll up, not a roll up, I think, but more like a jackknife sort of thing, a pinning combination, and he wins it with that. So I really like the finish because he kind of knows that the drop kick's coming. He avoids it, and that's the final thing. Like, that's the mistake that Z-Man makes that finally does him in, and always like those sort of dynamics. And, you know, I don't think this is some all-time classic, but it's a match that I've always liked. I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the opener on Wrestle War 92? I think it is, right? I could be wrong.
Yeah,
but
yes, it is.
Yeah, and I always have a nice spot in my heart for these sort of openers. And I wanted to show some love to babyface Brian Pillman in a singles match on here. So that was kind of where I was going with this one. I may be higher on this than a lot of people, but I thought 90 was a good slot for it.
Yeah, so this match was on my list for the majority of the year when I was trying to come up with the list. So it was one that narrowly missed. It was in that honorable mention category. So I'm really happy to see it make your list. And I enjoyed the same things you did, the story of them being evenly matched and former tag team partners. And I really liked the story they were able to tell.
Yep. So you want to, should we move to your number 90, Tyler?
Sure. My number 90 is Larry Zbysko and Steve Austin versus Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes from Super Brawl. So this was in the midst of the Dangerous Alliance, and faces start really hot, especially Barry, because he's showing how it's personal against Zbysko after the Cruncher angle, where he put Windham's hand in the car door. I believe that was at Halloween Havoc the year before. Then the Dangerous Alliance turns the tide when Austin saves, and they throw Barry over the top rope, so he gets kind of a quick face in peril, because they kind of do the double baby face in peril. Then he makes a hot tag to Dustin, runs wild before hitting a clothesline, and then he becomes a face in peril, and he really does a great. I think Dustin is kind of an underrated tag worker. At one point, Medusa slaps Dustin, falls, and gets clotheslined on the intensity in the whole match, I think. You get a hot tag to Barry and a really hot ending where, you know, they're going back and forth, and Barry tries a superplex on Zbysko, but he gets pushed off, and Dustin kind of comes, they were brawling outside, and he comes up and Zbysko, and he pushes him off the turnbuckle, and by this time it was the turnbuckle on the opposite side, and he hits him with a flying elbow for the win. And baby faces are I really enjoy this Dustin and Barry team. I wish they'd had a little bit longer of a run and match from a great Super Brawl card, and that won't be the last time we say that, I'm sure.
Yeah, this
that
is
was my number. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I threw this one on knowing that we're going to be covering it. It didn't make my list, but it's definitely, I think 92 at some points, especially with these guys. I agree with you. The Barry Windham, Dustin Rhodes team is awesome. Just kind of two big, like Texas guys kind of. And it's a great show. This Super Bowl 2 has an awesome atmosphere. It's a really good show. Great, actually. And yeah, Austin is kind of like coming into his own here. I really like Larry in this run. Between the Enforcers and then, you know, the Dangerous Alliance stuff is really cool. So I kind of like him in this run. And these guys all, yeah, they work well together. And like I was saying, I think 92 at some points, like this first half of 92, almost I think some of these matches were maybe even at a disadvantage because there just seems to be so many of them. In a good way, and they're all good, and a lot of them are with like the same group of guys, like, you know, Dangerous Alliance guys, and the, you know, the same group of faces and stuff, and sort of them all being intertwined. That it's, for whatever reason, when I was looking at them, I knew I wanted to have some of these matches, but it was like trying to figure out which one stood out to me for what reasons. And at times, I think, you know what I mean? It's almost like they're at a disadvantage for just how good they are and how many of them they are. They can kind of get lost in the shuffle, I think. And that's probably what happened to this one for me. But I threw it on before we did this. And yeah, it's definitely a good match. I agree. I'm a huge Barry Windham fan. And I would have to say one of the best parts of this match is I want to say they're talking about Rice. like, because obviously it's JR and Jesse, and so they get into some discussion of college football. And I want to say it's because Barry Windham played for Rice or something. And you get the great Jesse line where he says Rice in the, he says, like, JR says something about Rice playing in the Cotton Bowl, and Jesse says Rice in the Cotton Bowl, what, in 1904? So it's
I believe it was Austin's father.
Okay, yeah, Rice somebody
down there in the Cotton. And I had the exact same thought that Jesse had. I'm like, when the hell was Rice ever in the Cotton Bowl?
Yeah, when was Rice good at football?
I agree 100% with your. I agree 100% with your point about the Dangerous Alliance and the group of baby faces that they feuded with. How there's just so much. It was hard to choose.
Yeah, so, it's hard to distinguish for sure.
There's just so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that would bring us to your number 89 match.
Yeah, so my number 89, it actually, so it's funny that yours was what it was, because mine is sort of in the same sort of realm, I would say. So it's another one from 92. It's from an episode of Saturday Night, May 23rd, 92. So it's a six-man. We have Ricky Steamboat, Dustin Rhodes, and Nikita Koloff versus Arn, Bobby, and Larry. So one thing that's awesome about this is Arn and Bobby on the same team. Like, those are just, oh, man, that just that makes me really excited just right there. And like I said, I really like Larry in this run. You know, I don't know if Larry's always thought of as, like, the greatest wrestler, you know, throughout his career, but I really like him in this run. I think he plays his role very well. And this is sort of the WCW Saturday Night, like, first half of 92 special, where a lot of times they were throwing these main events out. There were two out of three falls, and that's what this one is. And it's like we said, it's basically they pluck some Dangerous Alliance guys, throw them against some faces, and say, here's like 25, 30 minutes or so, you know, go have a long match to close out Saturday Night, which is a cool concept to kind of establish an idea. There can be hit or miss sometimes, I think, just because, you know, that's it's kind of a hard thing to work every week. But anyway, so it's a cool sort of dynamic to have all these guys in there, this long match, and they really work the two out of three falls into this, and they do some pretty creative stuff with that. I always love with the Dangerous Alliance stuff how much they sell the teamwork and planning, and it really comes into play here because it is a six man. So you have, you know, three guys on the team. So you have Heyman out there scheming. At one point, so the faces kind of go down because Dustin gets caught with the phone. He actually steals the phone from Paul Lee, but then he gets caught using it. So I thought that was a nice subversion of what you would think, because you would think the heels are going to use the phone, but instead kind of Dustin gets caught up in their nonsense, which I think is a creative sort of way to do it. And it's just, you know, the whole match is just great execution, because just every single guy in here is really good, or at the very least can play their role well. Like, Nikita comes in and hits his power moves and that sort of stuff. And even the finish here is really cool, because they have the heels kind of have some miscommunication in the last fall, because it's obviously going to be tied 1-1 as usual. And they sort of have some like miscommunication. The finishes is sort of the faces outsmarting them. And Larry kind of accidentally bumps into, Arn, I think. And then that's what ends up costing the match. And this sort of becomes, you know, causes a little strife within the Dangerous Alliance. And I want to say this is kind of starts to lead to, like, I don't know if this, then Larry get kicked out, I want to say. And I think this kind of starts it. Kind of starts the downfall of the Dangerous Alliance, I guess, but because they kind of get pissed off at Larry and he takes the blame, that sort of thing. So I kind of like the way they weave the storyline into it. It's just a fun match seeing all these guys. The two out of three falls has worked pretty well, and they find creative ways to do all the finishes. So yeah, it was kind of, to me, Tyler, kind of scratched the same itch for me as your last match, just, you know, the 92 special pretty much.
Yeah, I agree, and I was going to ask if this was the one where Zbyszko continues to screw up and cause some matches, and I think it is where he does get kicked out and then turns babyface. And yeah, everything that the Dangerous Alliance does is, and I think Zbyszko, I didn't really have much thoughts on him heading into this. I'd seen some of his stuff with him. I knew he was in WCW and had seen some of the matches, but going through this project and watching as many matches as we did, I have a lot greater appreciation for Larry Zbyszko. So going into next year's Stretch Clark's project, which if anyone doesn't know, it will be the greatest WCW wrestler. I mean, I think Zabisco has a chance to, you know, I think he'll make my list fairly easily, I guess. So, and I don't know that I would have thought that before I watched all these matches.
Yeah, same page for me. Like, the enforcers were kind of like, man, they were, as I was watching through this stuff, because a lot of it I would just kind of watch, you know, if it was stuff I was interested in, I would kind of watch chronologically through certain chunks and stuff like that. And the enforcers were like a revelation for me. What a killer tag team.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we can go to, if you want to go to your next one, Tyler.
Okay, so my number 89 is Bret Hart versus Ric Flair from Sold Out 1998. So the story that they're telling is that they want to decide who's better, and Tony and Tanay just really sell it well. Obviously, it's going to be a very technical match with these two, which is what you'd expect. Flair puts on a figure four very early, so, you know, I think he's kind of trying to, it's a lot of one-upsmanship in this game, or in this match. Flair eventually distracts the ref and goes, I know this is not really reflective of the quality of the match, but there's a guy dressed like Hollywood Hogan in the front row, and another guy with his head painted like the number six billiard ball for six NWO, I guess. But I mean, he's got his whole head painted green. So that's commitment. That is more commitment to Sean Waltman than anyone else I know. So Bret argues with the ref. Flair clips the knee, and woo, we go to school with a figure four. Bret winds up turning it. And at one point, Bret like drops his straps down so Flair can hit the chops. But he's kind of like hulking up too. You know, I wouldn't say no selling it, but it's kind of like, okay, come on. And, you know, Flair hits his chops. Then Bret hits his five moves of doom. Flair taps to the sharpshooter. And it's just, basically, it's just a straight technical match as you'd expect. I think if it had a little more sizzle to go along with the steak, it might have been a little higher on my list. But as it is, you know, this is where.
No, the only thing I would say, yeah, just to kind of say, since I didn't rate this one, I would say kind of what you just mentioned is probably why it did make the cut for me. It was kind of like one of those matches where I felt it was very like fundamentally sound, but for some reason it never hit like that next gear or did anything really special to me that would ever clicked with me to be, I don't know, to make it on the list. Like, I feel like I rated, I think I want to say I had in like the 3.5 range. I'd have to pull it up, but I think I was more in that 3.5, 3.75 kind of range, like sort of just on the outside looking in, but.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that brings us to your number 88 match, if I'm counting correctly.
Yes, so my number 88 match would be, so this would be Vader versus, let's see, is that my number 88? No, my number 88 is, I think it would be, so my number 88 was the April 23rd, 88 WCW Saturday Night with Tully and Arn versus Barry Windham and Lex Luger, which I think we're going to talk about later, correct?
Correct. I have that match higher.
Very good. And so
My number 88 is the Midnight Express versus the original Midnight Express from Starrcade 1988, which I believe we'll talk about later because I believe you have that one higher.
Yes, I think I do have that one a bit higher. Which then would lead us into my 87 as we keep heading along. And this one we will talk about. So this would be Vader versus Cactus Jack from WCW Saturday Night from April 17th, 93. And I want to say we talked about the match that follows this on the last one, I believe, right? I think you had that one in your 90s, right?
That is correct. One thing I did like is that my match, I think, kind of followed the match that you'd selected. And I think more people have the match you higher. But I liked how they played off of each other. But I didn't want to talk too much about that, knowing you'd talk about this match in the next episode. So
yeah, because they are definitely like yours is sort of the sequel, and that's the one I feel like maybe the one that you picked maybe can sometimes be overlooked a bit because maybe people don't think of the match as much. Maybe they just think it's that bump and that's it. But as it was, I kind of figured I would only have one of the two. Because, you know, it'd be tough to, it's kind of one of those things where you kind of wish you could, but they're so tied together, you sort of wish you could lump them together. But since you could, I kind of thought this one was the better actual match, just because it's kind of the start of it. And a lot of it is going in, and you sort of get this idea that, you know, Vader's just going to eat him up like he does with everybody. But the whole story of the match is how, like, it's getting over Cactus's toughness. And, like, kind of how hot Cactus comes in and it kind of throws Vader off his game a little bit. Because Vader's sort of used to having everybody on the defensive because he's so dominant. And so Cactus kind of throws him off, which is good. And they do a really awesome job of selling this on commentary. And a lot of it is sort of pushing Cactus as a face a little bit, this whole deal, because pretty much before this he had sort of been a heel, if I'm correct on that. I think so. He was more heelish, so it kind of gives him a little bit of babyface toughness they're kind of going for. Maybe not like a pure like Sting babyface, but some babyface vibes. And man, there's just, and so kind of they move into this where Vader like he just starts clubbing the shit out of him. Like it's almost like Vader realizes, okay, this guy wants to play, like he thinks he can hang with me, and he just starts clubbing him. And obviously Vader's known for being a pretty stiff guy, and you know, Mick is known for being able to take a shit kicking. So he's just hammering him, and the way they shoot it too, like they shoot it really up close and you could just see Vader just clocking him. And I love the way Cactus too, and Foley so good at these little details, like he's just doing sort of the, I think it would later be known more of as like the Mankind scream, but he's kind of doing the Mankind squealing along the way, which is really awesome because he comes off as like a lunatic. Like he's just getting clubbed, but he's kind of screaming. So he's just sort of taking it. And then Cactus sort of gets a babyface comeback, which is really awesome. He goes out, he hits Harley, and then Vader just comes back at him and starts pummeling him again. And it's just a really awesome job of getting, like I said, to me, this whole thing and why it's so great is they're just getting Cactus over as like a guy who can hang and that he's tough. And even though he's crazy, he's, you know, he's more than just, I don't know how to say it. Like he's more than crazy. Like he's, you know, he can really fight. It's not just all, you know, him taking crazy bumps and that sort of thing. And I even like the ending because it sort of looks to be over, but then Cactus makes like one last ditch effort at the end, and he kind of gets Vader to bail out, and he does like a crazy flip onto him, and then he actually wins with the count out, which is an awesome moment. And just a really awesome face performance, a big upset. And then even sort of the post-match that I kind of lumped into it, Vader starts losing his shit, throwing the guardrail and stuff. Just the whole package of it is just excellent, you know, excellently worked. Vader doesn't lose anything from it. Cactus looks like, you know, looks so much better. He looks like an awesome face. It's just one of those matches where it's a well-worked match, but it also the storyline attached and what it, and you know, what it does for Cactus and how he looks after it, is just the whole thing of it is just so well done. And like we mentioned, it kind of leads into the one that you picked, which is, you know, kind of builds off of this, which is awesome. But for me as a full package, I kind of like this one a little bit more than the other one as an actual match, but they're both great. The both of them together is really the ideal way to watch them, I think.
Yeah. The one that I chose, he misses the like somersault, senton or whatever, it's crazy flip, and that he hit before. And Vader's also just so mad that he lost before. That power bombs, and that's how I, you know, I felt like they go together. But I agree, and I love making in WCW. But I almost feel guilty. I'm like, gosh, you don't have to do that. Don't throw your head onto the concrete. We will love you anyway. But I guess it's, you know, 20 years too late, whatever, 30 years too late. So. Go ahead.
No, yeah, I say it worked for him. He got over. But yeah, we should. So we'll go to your, like you said, let's go to your next one and you can explain it.
So my number 87 is Ric Flair versus Terry Funk, I Quit match, Clash of the Champions 9. And if there's anyone driving and they're wrecking their car, I know I'm fully aware most people are higher. Almost everyone is higher on this match than I am. I know that I am on an island. I don't think it's a deserted island, but it's very, very sparsely populated. I am prepared to talk about the reasons why I might be lower. It will just be some time until I do that. So yeah, with that, I believe that takes us to your sixth match.
Yeah. So my, yes, my number 86 was Luger versus Pillman. So real quick, I will say that maybe not to the level of you, but we may agree to some extent on your number 87. I have it higher, but I think we may have some that we agree on with that. But so my 87 anyway was, or my, what are we on? 86, 87, who knows? 86 it should be. Yeah. Luger, so I had Luger versus Pillman for the U.S. title match from Havoc 1989, which I believe you have a bit higher, Tyler. So I think we'll keep chugging along.
That is correct. Okay, so my number 86 match is Ric Flair and Sting versus Great Muta and Terry Funk in the Thunderdome cage from Halloween Havoc 1989. So this is just pure chaos in the Thunder cage, which it was allegedly electrified, and that was highlighted when something caught fire before the match. And I don't know, and I haven't heard or read anything, whether that was done intentionally so everyone would think that it was really electrocuted, or that was really, the cage was really electrified so that no one would question the gimmick, or if it, the cage was really electrified and WCW just screwed something up and popped something on fire. And to me, that's a 50-50 shot either. I don't know. There's lots of cage climbing, and they have these ropes there, so people are swinging ropes like Toxic Impression, and everyone's just so over that it's incredible. There's brawling, you know, cage shots, everything. The rules were a little unique in that both teams had these, I think they called them special Terminators. So it was Gary Hart for Muta and Terry Funk, and it was Ole Anderson for Ric Flair and Sting. And Bruno Sammartino was the special. They had a really good ending, I thought. Bruno, he decks Muta, and then Ole Anderson goes and Hart, whose towel then goes flying onto Bruno, and Bruno looks and he sees that Ole still has his towel, so he knows that Gary Hart must have been the one that threw the towel in, you know, which is, I don't know, it's maybe it's a little cheesy and nobody had to actually throw in the towel, but you know, when you have a heel manager, you know, that's a difficult thing because they're not going to throw in their towel. So anyway, I like the chaos of this match, and I'm probably not just this, but you know, it was a very chaotic match, I thought. So, and kind of, you know, is towards the end of that really hot 1989 run.
Yeah, it's a fun one. I think, to me, maybe its weaknesses are, I think it's a bit too long. Like, I like it for all the reasons that you said. Like, it's real fun, and it is messy in a fun way. But I think it almost gets a little bit too messy, and it sort of holds it back from being, like, really great. And it's really good. It's fun to watch. But, like I said, I think it's a bit too long. But it's a very entertaining sort of cluster in a good way of a match, like a clusterfuck of a match in a fun way. Like you say, you have Sting trying to swing on the thing like Tarzan and stuff. It's just, it's wild, but it's really fun. And it's really, to me, it's really indicative of those early Halloween Havocs, like the vibe they were trying to do, like doing crazy stuff like this.
Yeah. All right. I think that would lead to your number 85, Matt.
So my number 85, I'm going old school on this one. Sean Kidd would be proud, repping Crock and Roll. So I have from Starrcade 1983, Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood versus Jack and Jerry Briscoe for the NWA World Tag Team titles. So first off, obviously Steamboat is Steamboat. I don't have to really say much about him, but I think for when he was around, I think Jay Youngblood was pretty good in his time. If you watch some of the old Mid-Atlantics, he's pretty good in the ring. He's pretty kind of, I think, works a similar sort of style as Steamboat, and then he kind of works this a lot of times like a fiery babyface sort of thing. I don't think to the level of Steamboat, obviously, but he's a terrible promo, though, just as a quick aside. Any promo I've ever seen from him is like some of the worst things I've ever seen. He looks like he's like high out of his mind. But anyway, and then Jack and Jerry Briscoe are awesome. It won't be the first time we see them on here. But yeah, I like the pairing. Always like when you have a match. Is like, I think sometimes you have like styles clashes in a match, which can be bad, but I always like when you have a good like styles contrast, and I think you get that in this match because the Briscoes are obviously doing the like the kind of shooters sort of thing, like that's their sort of style and personality, and then Steamboat and Youngblood are kind of like the like younger, more fiery, you know, for this time probably sort of high flying, even though obviously they're not, you know, busted out too much crazy stuff, but for this time frame and in this setting, I think they kind of have that vibe. And yeah, just everything is really fluid. There was a nice ebb and flow to the match. Like I said, there's a good contrast between styles. So you kind of have the Briscoes kind of working them down. And then, you know, Steamboat and Youngblood kind of make little comebacks and stuff. And finally, I kind of like that throughout the whole match, the faces are kind of grinding through and trying to get an advantage. And they finally get the upper hand in. And that allows them to win. It's a huge victory. It's a cool moment. It's on the first Starrcade, so that's some cool significance to it that I think adds at least a little juice to it. And it is a really good match. I do enjoy it. And I got to say, I'll be getting to some other matches later, but I have to say, specifically Jack Briscoe doing this list, it's not somebody I'd really ever watch much wrestling just because I guess I just haven't seen a lot of his time frame. And I feel like even this is probably getting to the end of his, you know, I'm not a historian of wrestling, but I feel like even this is probably getting to the end of his career. And just he was kind of a fun discovery, you know, as you're doing these lists. So for me, he was a cool discovery. And I really enjoyed a lot of the stuff I saw from him on here. And this was an example too. But yeah, just a cool, fun tag title match with a fun moment with the faces winning. So that one was enough to get it in the 80s here for me.
Yeah, I agree. I like both teams. I think they're really good pairing. And you're right. It's a great moment on the first Starrcade. So I think that was a good choice. Mm-hmm. My number 85 is Arn Anderson versus Ric Flair from Fall Brawl 1995. And I believe that you have that one higher. So we would talk about that later.
Yes, I do have it a bit higher, so we'll go to my number 84. My number 84 would be Arn and Tully versus Dusty and Sting for the NWA Tag Team titles from Clash of the Champions 2. So this one, Arn and Tully are an amazing tag team, obviously, and they're awesome in here. I just, you know, anything they do together, they just, man, their execution on everything, the way they sell, they kind of stooge a lot when they're selling, but without getting like over the top or too cartoony, I think. When they're on offense, they just dissect everybody, and it's so awesome. They're so fluid in the way they tag in and out. It's just, there's like never, I feel like there's never a dull moment when you have Arn and Tully in there. So they're obviously great in this. And then Dusty and Sting are awesome, kind of just babyface team. This whole time frame here, so you have, it's in an early Clash, like the main event on Clash 2. And so the crowd is just losing it. So you have a super hot crowd. The crowd is super hot for Dusty and Sting. And I think the atmosphere helps a lot. Like I said, Arn and Tully kind of carry it a little bit. But then also Dusty and Sting, anytime they get in the ring and anytime they fire up, like when Dusty starts throwing the elbows, you know, the crowd is just losing it. It's awesome. So I think this one for me and why it was here, you know, maybe on the back end, is that I don't know if it's the greatest match because it is very good and I like the energy and everything, but I don't know if it ever really gets to a great technical match. But I think it's helped a lot just by the main event energy. Like, to me, I think something about it just, it really, like to me, it was indicative like of a early Clash main event, that sort of energy in these early late 80s clashes. It kind of has a little bit of a, you know, not the, you know, not the most satisfying finish because it just ends up being a DQ, I believe. But yeah, this one a lot was, it was well done, but a lot of it was the atmosphere for me, I think, really helps this match. And I thought it was cool. I kind of wanted to include this sort of thing. And I think Dusty and Sting is a fun team to have on the list.
Yeah, for sure. So had some of that big Dust energy going for it. So and you're right. They're both great baby faces. It was super over at the time. Arn and Tully, you know, just can do no wrong. So, you know, that type of hot atmosphere was the type of things that I like to see on this list in particular. Promotions, just if you haven't watched it, if you're listening, you will be surprised at how over everybody is for mid to late 80s period of time, from 85 to 88 or so. Just, it's incredible. So,
yep.
All right. So we're moving on to my, I think we're on 84, is that right?
Yep, 84.
I have some more Big Dust energy because I have Dustin Rhodes, and the Nasty Boys. This is Terry Funk, Taos Buck, Arn Anderson, and Colonel Robert Parker, War Games at Fall Brawl 1994. So this is kind of the great culmination of the feud between Dustin and been having problems with Funk and Parker. So he asks Arn Anderson to be his partner at Bash at the Beach, presumably on the advice of fellow global babyface Sting. And I can only imagine that Ric Flair and Satan were, those are the only two that I would trust. As expected, turns on Dustin, so he's tagged in and just stole that Arn Swank DDT, which I love. So, and that leads to Dusty begging Dustin to be his partner and just cutting this all-time great promo to promote the match. And I think it's right up there with Hard Times because it really resonates with Dusty saying he wasn't there and he reflected Dustin growing up and also walked behind her where the views and what was it, Dustin had given his innocence and he paid him back and was gone. But I mean, the emotion is perfect on that, and really hits. Like, there was nothing corny about it. So really, a lot of the angle kind of drove how much I liked the match. Although I think this is a really good match. The match was great, and I think Dustin gives kind of a star performance in the match. And Funk and Buck, they're really good brawlers. So I think it's the best four-man War Games and the best War Games without blood. And both of those are kind of maybe, I don't know if it's damning with faint praise, but it's both of those things make it harder to have a great War Games match. And I think it's probably the best match where one or more participants shit their pants, I think, allegedly.
Yeah. Yeah, I had this one too. So I had this one a little high, like lower, I guess you would say. I had it at number 99 because I did one on the list for the same reason you said. I really liked the, you know, the Rose, the father and son dynamic. The angle, like you said, is really good going in. And it's not a bad, you know, I think it may get overlooked a little bit because the team seems kind of random. Both, you know, you have the Nasty Boys in there and Bunkhouse Buck, and it all seems a little bit random, especially compared to a lot of War Games, which are so star-studded that I think, you know, maybe it gets overlooked. And it's probably not on the level of those. But like you said, for... You know, it's a cool angle and everything, and it's one that I have a soft spot for, so I snuck it onto my list also.
All right. So, I think we're ready for your number 83 match.
Yes, so my number 83 would be Chris Benoit versus Booker T from the Great American Bash 1998. This is, of course, from their very memorable series of matches, the Best of Seven. And so this is kind of the finale of that. And I think this is actually, I want to say this is, I'm not an expert on late era. Anytime you get kind of into this, like past 97, I get a little fuzzy on, you know, what the storylines and stuff are, but I'm pretty sure, and they mentioned during the match, is that I think this is actually like match number 8, because I think there was something happened. They talk about it here in the commentary about like Chris Benoit could have had it, but he wanted to get it the honest way because someone interfered or something. But yeah, I think part of why I won is because like we talked about in the first episode, I think part of when you do these lists is that it is about putting the best matches, but you do want to have a kind of a diverse list. And this is a very, you know, this is an extremely famous series from these guys. I found when I was doing the list, I wasn't finding a ton of stuff from late era WCW, meaning from about 98 onward. So I was trying to find ways to at least have that somewhere on my list, even if it wasn't super high. And this one kind of fit the bill just because of, you know, this pairing in the series. But this is a really good one. You get kind of a methodical start early, which kind of fits the narrative. And Benoit is just a really awesome dissection by Benoit, just tearing apart Booker T. I remember this especially too. I think like I have a nostalgic thing for this because I was pretty young at this time, so I would have been like 8. And I remember watching this series of matches, and it kind of was an introduction to me of this sort of, because like most of the wrestling I'd watched growing up, I kind of started watching like 96. So most between both promotions, it wasn't kind of presented in this manner that they sort of pushed with this series, where it was very much about it being an athletic competition, best of seven, and like how are these two guys going to best each other and that sort of thing. So to me, it kind of holds a little bit of fondness for me because it was sort of my introduction to that type of narrative in wrestling, where you really focus on the match and how each guy's working the match, and it's not as much about the storyline and angles as far as face heel and that sort of thing. It's more about the two competitors in the ring. So it kind of always is an interesting, you know, matchup for me because of that. But Booker T's comebacks are really good, and Benoit is just like too much for him. But it, really good stamina from Booker T, as he never gets in, never gives in, and he finally gets the win. It is a little bit weird to me that Benoit loses. I think it kind of hurts the match a bit. Like, I don't know if Booker T completely earns it, and I realize now that I'm kind of dogging a match that I picked for my list. But to me, that's the weakness of this one, is that it does seem like Benoit worked him over so much, and then Booker T still pulls out the win is a little weird. But either way, it's a really awesome series and a kind of a good matchup. I don't want to find a place to represent on the list, and I thought this was decent enough. I maybe could have put it, you know, as I'm talking through it, maybe it would have been better in the 90s, because I don't know, like I may have some matches that we've talked about so far that maybe are better pure matches, but for whatever reason, I kind of wanted it. Maybe for other intangibles. Like for its intangibles, I may have snuck it a little bit higher.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right that it has that significance. So I wouldn't blame you for that. And I thought, I remember this match and remember thinking it was great. I probably had it around 4 stars. And generally speaking, everything that made my list was about 4.25 or higher. Mm-hmm. With the, you know, the exception of maybe the last few matches that the Hogan Goldberg and the NWO debut and those things. So that's what gets to be hard when we're, you know, trying to have this discussion. Well, this one didn't make my list, but certainly that doesn't mean I didn't think it was a good match. And that's, you know, I think every match on both our lists is a good to great match. You know, so, you know, and I remember seeing Booker T in that match is and I think because I was recently on the wonderful Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, and they had a match in 2002. I thought it was way better. you know, than I thought much of WWE Booker was. So I think they really had something, those two.
Yep. So
all right.
Shall we carry on?
Yes. So my number 83 match also features Chris Benoit, and that is Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko versus Raven and Perry Saturn from Spring Stampede 1990. I believe you have that a bit higher.
Yes, a tad higher, I think, but we should be talking about it fairly soon. Shouldn't be very long in the next few episodes. But anyway, I'll go on to my number 82, which we will talk about. This will be a Sean Kidd special. Sean's going to be very proud of me for this one. So I have Ronnie Garvin versus Tully Blanchard in a taped fist match, and this is from Great American Bash 86. I forget, because this would be like when they did the tour. I forget exactly which one this is from, but like what stop it was. I don't know if it was like Charlotte or something. But yeah, this one is really fun. The start of this is just already out of the gate super fun, because Garvin just completely knocks out Tully. Like, I want to say it's even before the bell even starts. Like, he just knocks him out, and then JJ has to come in and like revive him. And like before, and like he can't even get his robe off, because even once he gets up and the match starts, Garvin basically like knocks him out again. And so the crowd is just losing it from the beginning, because Garvin's all over him. Tully's really awesome here, like struggling to even get his robe off is funny at one point. And that's what a lot of the early part of the match is, just Garvin just beating the piss out of him. And it's just, it's, you know, the taped fist thing. So pretty much all he's doing is punching, which, I don't know, Ron Garvin punching somebody for 10 minutes is pretty fun for me. At one point, and like I said, the heel stuff is awesome here. Like, JJ has to sneak in the smelling salts to try and get Tully back in. But in an awesome heel moment, it's like Tully survives just long enough to kind of get the foreign object and cheat and win. So it's a good story in that Tully is like just trying to do everything he can to survive, and then he, like, until he can finally cheat, which is fun. I think I picked this one a lot because, one, I just like seeing Ron Garvin beating the piss out of somebody, because he throws cool punches. It's a fun concept for a match. I love the whole vibe of these early Great American Bashes. It's just a cool atmosphere that they have going on. And so that kind of gives it bonus points for me. It's just unique and well done. Just a fun little kind of something different, you know. And for these 80s matches, it was cool. It was like a cool kind of one of these kind of goofy in a good way 80s matches. And so I really enjoyed it. So I put it in here. Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. That match is tons of fun for, you know, all the stooging, and Garvin knocks him out before the bell hasn't rang. He hasn't got his robe off, none of that. And, you know, and I've heard other people express that love, and here to do it makes me wonder, well, what was I thinking not including that? But
yeah, it depends on how you
it
see
is
it.
Tough. You've only got 100. Yeah, and I think it was because being the tape fist match, it's like a boxing match almost. But and it's tons of fun, and we'll talk in future episodes about why, or at least why I believe that, you know, they were having the tape fist matches, because there's a history there as well. And I think didn't watch those matches in the frame, you know, maybe one of these would have. But again, it's okay. So that moves on to my number 82, which is another War Games match. So this one is from 1988, and it is Dusty Rhodes, Nikita Koloff, Lex Luger, Steve Williams, and Paul Ellering versus the Four Horsemen of Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Barry Windham, and J.J. Dillon. And I think this one was kind of somewhat initially overlooked. I think it gets overshadowed by the original War Games match, which is an all-timer. I think it was on the WWE War Games DVD, and it may have even been, like, those two matches may have been consecutive matches. So if you watch them like that, this one wouldn't stand out as much. Chad talked about this one on Carolina Dreamin'. So, and he kind of expressed the same sentiment that it wasn't as, it kind of got lost in the sands of time or whatever. But when I rewatched it, I was really impressed. So, Arn flips off the crowd on the way in. So he's just, you know, the horsemen are getting their heel heat. Dusty starts. And those two are just a great combo to start. His Arn's do just really well. And, you know, Dusty does good babyface shine. He gets the crowd into it. It is great. Arn takes control of some kind of a spike. And both guys are bleeding. And there's going to be times I lose track of who's playing this. You know, I think somebody is because they'll be just going into the cage. It's kind of the same chaos, only more than the Thunder Cage match. So, Barry's in, and the horsemen are working over Dusty's cut. Barry does his pull. I don't know if that's finished in this context. I think Dusty's got a cut. So Dr. Death is next in front of him in the heels. Chop block, and Dusty kind of recovers. And Flair's in next, and so he goes and he's chopping Doc. He's no-selling it to a big reaction. And then, you know, no-selling I don't think is always bad, and this is a case where I think it works. And I think this is just a repeated pattern with these baby faces. They're all really built for that. It's a low blow, so the heels take control again. And then Luger comes in, and he's another guy that just runs wild again. They're all these powerhouse baby faces that just run wild when it's their turn to do so. So it's about at this point when I really lose track of who else bleeding. Tully comes in next, and he hits Luger with a chair. So just rolling them out even more so than that. In some future matches, I think. So I have down that Luger gives Arn a great nut shot. So I don't really remember what that is, but it must have been really significant for me to make a note of it, I guess. So, and JJ's in last for the horsemen. Everything's just total chaos. And he goes for Nikita and gets beaten down. I think that one of the other heels had Nikita in a compromising position, and so he went for him, and immediately it's the tables turned there. And the Ellering's in last, which is a little odd because the Road Warriors aren't in the match, so I guess just because Ellering had been in previous War Games matches and they kind of needed a manager type for the baby faces as well, I guess that's why, you know, he's in there. But the match ends when Dusty gets the figure four on JJ, and the faces can hold off the horsemen. And, you know, again, all the faces were just really suited for this. And I thought Doc was particularly good and no selling effectively. And Luger and Flair really showed that they had great chemistry, which is going to, of course, come into play, you know, in some of our future episodes, I think.
Yeah.
And I was just going to say, I think this one shows kind of the concept of War Games and how significant it was, because it's, you know, I know I have several more War Games, and I know you have several more War Games matches, and it's really going to figure prominently on our list, I think.
Yeah, and that may have been one reason why I left it off, because I had watched it before for this show, just to kind of refresh my memory of it. And it is really good. I think it really starts cooking when Luger gets in. I really like the whole stretch after Luger gets in. I think it's really good. But yeah, it may just, for me, be a victim of what you said earlier. Like, it may have just slipped through. Like, as I watched it, I was kind of like, man, maybe I should have had this. This is pretty good. Like, I'm enjoying this. So it may just be an oversight by me. But it's like you said, there's so many of them that are good. It's kind of, you start to get to the point where you're like, how many do I include, you know? Or...
Yeah,
it's kind of a push-pull.
It's hard to screw up War Games. Now, WCW manages a few times, but for the most part, most of the time when they screw it up, it's because they've changed the rules in some way, or they've done, you know, every once in a while they'll put people in there that like there's just no way that was going to be past a certain level. Usually if you just do the formula, you know, you're good.
Yep.
All right. I think that takes us to your number 81.
Yes. So my number 81 is a match that I really, really enjoy. And I rewatched it before we recorded this, and I was almost thinking I could have had it higher because that's how much I was enjoying it. So this would be Magnum TA versus Ole Anderson from WCW, World Championship Wrestling, December 28th, 85, which is an excellent overall episode of WCW. It is really awesome. It'll be awesome when Sean gets to it on Crock and Roll, because you kind of get the double main event, which I think is a match that the other main event is one that I think we're going to talk about later on, because it's Flair Garvin. But before that, we get this match, and I want to say this is for the so many titles in Old Crockett. I want to say this is the U.S. title they were fighting for. I didn't write it down, but it's for a title because it's like the championship series. So anyway, this whole episode is really awesome. And this was just like such a war between these two guys. They really do an awesome job of getting across that they just really don't like each other. The great punches from both guys. Like, nothing they're doing in this match is really fancy, but everything looks legit. It looks like it matters. There's a really awesome dynamic of Ole sort of being the old vet, and Magnum is kind of like the hot up and coming star babyface, which is cool. They really do a good job of getting it over too. And that, like, there's a ton of spots in the match where you kind of think Magnum has it, but Ole just has this like supreme ring awareness where every time Magnum's landing something, Ole just is near the ropes. Like, he makes sure he positions himself near the ropes so he can break it, which is awesome. And I'm always really big on, I love in matches, especially these older matches, always do a really good job of this, is when the guys really, when they have these kind of slugfest matches and they start selling the exhaustion. I think we're going to see some later in my list that I think even take it to another level with this. That's really good. But they just sell by the end. They both look like punched out, and they're just like wailing on each other, trying their best. Like, you know, it's basically becomes like a war of attrition, which is really awesome. And so at one part, they kind of do sort of a false finish because they ring the bell. I think they do a time limit, but then Jim Crockett comes out and restarts it. And so they have to keep going. Ole's pissed. And I always love David Crockett is like telling them, no, it's got to go on. He's like losing it, which is always fun. And then sort of because Ole maybe hasn't recovered from being pissed off that they restarted, Magnum is able to take advantage and win with the roll-up. So it's a big moment. Huge crowd reaction. Yeah, it's just awesome. Some great stuff from 85. I was just thinking the whole time, like, shout out to Sean. He'll be covering this, I'm sure soon. He's almost up to this in his timeline on Crock and Roll. But I was just thinking, like, this is like, you know, 85 Crockett special right here. Just two guys. And I think it even adds a little bit to atmosphere. I find when you do have a really good match in this small studio setting with this tiny crowd, and the way they shoot it is so close up and sort of intimate, I think that adds something to the match too when you do get these awesome matches. And, man, I just really love this. It's just an awesome match from top to bottom. I can't say enough good things about it. And the more I talk about it, the after rewatching it, it's almost like one that I feel like I could have went higher on. As I'm looking at some matches that I have higher than it, it easily could have went higher on the list because it's real good.
Yeah. So I watched this again because I knew we were going to talk about it. And I saw a lot of the things that you were seeing there. So I'm pretty sure that good old Will from Texas won't be my friend anymore because I didn't have it on the list, and I apologize, Will. But so you and him should be golden, at least for a while. So
yeah.
I'll let you know when you'll make him mad. But
we'll see.
This one was great. Yeah. And like you mentioned, the punches and punching themselves out, like that really comes across here. And just, it's kind of incredible to think in one episode, just one TV taping, like you said, in the studio, we had two matches in the top 100 of the company. So that's just crazy. So, and I think it must have been for the U.S. title. I didn't pay attention to it at the time, but just looking at the date, it's in late December of 85. Should have been right after Starrcade 85.
Yeah.
And Magnum would have won this title. So, yeah. So you really ended on a hell of a sprint there of some great mid-80s stuff. So kudos to you on that. And with that, I will finish this up by saying my number 81 match, which is Dean Malenko versus Rey Mysterio Jr. from Halloween Havoc 1996. I believe you have that one higher.
Yes, I do have that a bit higher. I do enjoy that one quite a bit. So we'll be talking about that one a little bit later on.
Yep, that sounds good. So, well, I enjoyed talking to the WCW matches, getting my comfort food. I'm warmed up a little bit in my basement, which is not particularly warm in general, but we were able to ease my pains a little bit. So thanks, Jake. It's always fun. Is there anything that you want to plug?
Yeah, for sure. So anytime here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check me out on PTB NXT. Our most recent episode, probably by the time this comes out, will be covering July of 2014 NXT TV. And you can also find me over on Highway to the Impact Zone, where we will be covering, most likely have just covered, Victory Road 2004, the first non-weekly TNA pay-per-view. So we'll see how that goes. You can check out our thoughts on that. And then over on the North-South Connection feed, I, of course, host the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, which Tyler mentioned that he was just on recently. But yeah, that's about all I have going on. Yeah, this is a ton of fun. I feel like we're really getting to a groove with it. I think we have a good pace going where we cover 10, keeps it to about an hour. So I hope everyone, thanks anyone for listening, and I hope you continue on this journey so you can either agree, disagree, or, you know, whatever as we continue popping through these lists.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thanks to all our listeners. I would just have a couple things that I would mention as well. The voter results will be coming out by the time. Hopefully, they will have started to post. But the plan is to post them on the Place to Be Nation website on Fridays, and I'm sure it'll be shared on the social media channels for PTBN. So be looking for the actual voter results. So we'll see if Jake and I are on track, where we're high, where we're low, and all that. So be looking for that. And also, I would encourage you to participate in the Next Stretch Project, which I mentioned earlier is the greatest WCW wrestler ever. And that's on the same Facebook page that the GWCW matches page was. So you should be able to find it. If not, you can search for it, or, you know, hit one of us up and we can help you with that. We're starting to get some discussion on that. And as Jake and I kind of go through our list, sometimes we have a little anxiety over whether we made the right choice or not. And that's still all in good fun. That's not the takeaway we want for any potential voters. There's no right or wrong list. I mean, so we want your participation. So don't pull a Tim Capel. This is all in good fun. So the more participation we have, the better results we'll have. So, and that's all I've got. So thank you for listening. And here for Jacob Williams, I'm Tyler Kelly. Thank you for listening, and we will be back with episode 3 soon.
Peace. You're like a dream come true. Just wanna be with you. Girl, it's plain to see that you're the only one for me. And repeat steps 1 through 3.
themselves out and all emotional. Once you know what it's all about, hey, and undesirable for us to be apart. Never would have made it very far. Cause you know you got the keys to my heart. Cause one, you're like a dream come true. Just wanna be with you. Three, girl, it's plain to see.